The only thing I would add with cyber is that the speed of development is such that it's clearly disruptive, whatever people think, and that there are features of cyber that that are worth noting here. Firstly, it is cheaper, generally speaking, and will become cheaper to attack than to defend, because when you're defending, you're having to anticipate all the levels of different attack. So, and it is cheaper, generally speaking, than the nuclear weapon systems that they may seek to disrupt. So I can very much foresee a future where possibly even there today, who knows, where there is greater and greater uncertainty as to whether the systems that are relied upon for nuclear deterrence would actually work. And that is surely a situation of greater uncertainty, and where doctrines and philosophies around nuclear deterrence need to account for. I don't see any evidence yet of anybody really paying attention to this, but you know, I can envisage a situation where the Americans have infiltrated to such an extent Russian systems that they know with near certainty that they could disrupt any attempt to fire those systems, and vice versa, at a fraction of the cost that they spent to invest in those systems. We need to be thinking about these things. I would agree with the general. I very much welcome Sweden's statement that national security itself has a deep morality to it. I don't know if I would describe myself as a pacifist. I'm very close to it. But I respect those people who have a morality that is very strongly associated with the protection of their own state, just as Jim has devoted his life to. And we have to respect that if we're going to work with people who have different moralities. So I would be cautious about throwing around one ethical frame for as truth and another as not. So we have to have respect, and that is why I'm keen on promoting this idea of framing this in terms of responsibility. Now, Mexico asked me directly, what do I think about the boycott of this institution, and what does it say for my recommendations? Well, I think what it says is that the nuclear weapon states are nervous. There is more brittleness here than sometimes meets the eye. And I give you one analogy here with my own country. There is a debate as to whether Britain should retain nuclear submarines on patrol at all times. There is an official recognition there is no strategic threat to Britain. So why do we have today, they may be in 10 years' time, but why do we have submarines out at sea all the time? And there is a proxy debate, a very technical debate that I'm engaged in. But the real issue here is because if we drop continuous patrolling, the commitment to the deterrence mission starts to fall away. And this is one example of all the examples of nuclear weapon states, which is it takes a huge commitment, a huge amount of resources to keep these systems going. And that inevitably leads to brittleness and nervousness when it comes to discussing these issues. I still regret the indefinite extension of the Non-Proliferation Treaty in 1995. I think there was an opportunity there to continue a conversation where the nuclear weapon states had skin in the game. They value the NPT tremendously. So the question I would pose is, where is the negotiation? If they attend an open-ended working group, what is in it for them? And at the moment, there isn't a great deal. And I think that the balance was probably tipped because of the unintended consequence of focusing on so much talk on the ban treaty. Now, this is not to say that was a bad thing to do. There are many positive reasons why we need to be talking about a ban treaty. But every time we talk about it, there are unintended consequences from that talk and a deeper polarization. That polarization has positive and negative consequences, but we have to admit that there are negative unintended consequences from that conversation. And one of them may be the fact that there are no nuclear armed states in this room. I would point you to the ancient fable of the sun and the wind, where they entered into a competition to see which could get the coat off the man. And the wind said, I can blow that coat off that man. And the wind blew and blew and blew, and the coat was pulled ever tighter. And the sun came out, and the man took his coat off. We need to think about how we can actually invite and encourage the nuclear weapon states into a conversation that treats their concerns seriously. And this comes to the statement from Germany, which I think was an extremely eloquent description of the trap that we are in Europe in particular. And when you're in a trap, you need to not go through the same thing over and over again. You need to think of new ways of framing it, new responses. And this is particularly so in the case of the Russian perspective, which will not get an airing today, so I'll try it very, very briefly. The Russians see themselves as encircled. They see themselves deeply embedded in a legacy where they have neighbours that hate them for understandable reasons, perhaps. They see themselves in a deeper struggle for existence, and they see the nuclear threats they make as an essential part of the strategy they have to gain respect and position in the international community. What are we going to do to try to encourage the Russians out of their trap? Well, we don't do it by lecturing them, and we don't do it by threatening them. We do it by inviting them into a conversation about the assumptions that underpin that strategy that I have just outlined, those competing commitments. And I think deterrence itself, to come to Mexico's other question, deterrence itself is brittle and unstable, for a whole host of reasons that have always been there, but will get worse with the introduction of these disruptive technologies and the social changes that I referred to earlier. We need to move away from the traditional debate over counter value and counter force that still dominates discussion on deterrence on the Hill in Washington today, because in the end, we need to be encouraging people into a mindset that involves getting them to understand that their security, their national security, which we have to respect, depends upon arrangements, upon arms control that based not just on numbers but on quality, absolutely, and upon a framing of responsibility. Thank you.